If you are sitting at home next to your radio, you're hearing the music faster than you are if you're in the hall.
Listening for the secret. Searching for the sound. This is the Sound Podcast with Ira Haberman.
By the time I thought about missing you, you were Portland bound, hell-bent for the Northwest, running
You've been listening to the title track off the Kitchen Dwellers' latest full-length album, Seven Devils, available now wherever you buy or stream music. Amongst the jam bands that seem like they are always on the road are the Kitchen Dwellers. The Montana-based quartet are part bluegrass or even jamgrass and part psychedelia. Their unique sound and the constant touring ethos has created quite a story to unpack. The Kitchen Dwellers released their fourth studio album, Seven Devils, a few weeks back, which gave us a reason to catch up with Joe Funk, the band's upright bass player. You're busy, you're in tour season, you're on the road and such, and so thanks for taking the time. Really appreciate it.
Absolutely, happy to be here.
This is the fourth record. Seven Devils marks the fourth time you guys went into the studio for a full length. How do you feel about it? I mean, it hasn't been that long since Wise River, but certainly it's been a bit of time. How does it feel to have another record out?
Just very exciting. We're excited to play new music, I think, more than anything. Have new music at our fingertips to play to live audiences and experiment with. And also really excited for everybody to hear this record. We put way more work into this record than any other one so far. So excited to have it out there and get people listening.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong. This is the first time that you all sort of collaborated on the music. I think in the past, maybe Torin brought the tunes and sort of had a sense of where things were going. But this was a way more collaborative affair. Is that accurate?
I would say every album has been more collaborative as they've gone on. Wise River was, as far as the songwriting, was pretty collaborative. We did a very long pre-production process where we were kind of going back and forth with Corey Wong, our producer. And that was sort of the end of the writing process. Songs were maybe 50% completed, and then we completed the other half with the full band. And then Seven Devils, we took a step further and didn't do hardly any pre-production process. We did almost all of that final writing in the studio. And some of the songs were not songs till like 2 days before we were out of the studio. For example, Unwind, we literally wrote in there with the producer darn near from scratch. Torn had some words and a couple ideas, chords and a little melody, but other than that, that song really came together from the ground up, sitting the five of us in a studio.
Yeah, you mentioned that the production was a big part of this too. Was Glenn Brown, you know, Corey was on the last record. Glenn Brown has much more of a bluegrass, let's say jamgrass country vibe to him than Corey Wong certainly did. Did that bring a very different element? I mean, you've worked with Glenn before, but did that bring a very different element to the table than Wise River?
Yeah, I mean, Glenn and Corey are masters in different ways, I would say. Glenn could literally work for 4 days straight without even thinking about taking a piss break or eating a meal. he'll just go. Like, that is so far in a way his passion working in that studio that he's just a workhorse in there. And he had a very large influence on this album. It was really interesting to work with him. Really cool to see his process. It was totally different from anything we'd ever done before. And it was really almost the opposite of working with Corey. Corey was a master in his own way. We did a lot of stuff in post, whereas with Glenn, we did almost everything sitting there in the studio, no matter how many takes it took or whatever, to get it all sounding right. And any little tangent of idea we could run with for an entire day and see if it went anywhere. If it didn't go anywhere, that was fine. But with Corey, it was kind of like bam, bam, bam. We just like recorded everything, got it out, fixed everything in post, did a lot of the like fun tweaking stuff after the fact, whereas with Glenn, all the fun tweaking stuff was like sitting there messing with little scales and do we want to add a sustained two here or whatnot, and every chord was kind of microanalyzed, which was really, really interesting.
I don't know if it was purposeful, but clearly Dante's Inferno has a lot to do with this record, and you know, each song sort of has a different theme to it as part of an overall life or sins or what have you. Was that intentional too, or was that just something that as the work sort of came together, it sort of started to make more sense that that's where you were headed?
That was definitely as the work came together. I can't remember if it was Torn or Max had the realization that a lot of our songs kind of coincided with the Seven Deadly Sins and Dante's Inferno, kind of like tied this whole thing together. I mean, the name Seven Devils, Couldn't have been better for that. And so we sort of tied it all in after the fact. And Torrin and Max really had a big part in that. I actually had never read Dante's Inferno. I still have not read Dante's Inferno. I don't know hardly anything about it.
Yeah, it's two of us.
But I mean, I'm all aboard with the idea of a concept album that was made a concept post. With I think it's really fun, and it's fun to play off that even with some of the, like, the artistic imagery along with songs and stuff. It was cool.
So, what was it about this record in particular that made it so different, made the vibe so different from records past? Was it this is the fourth record? Was it the fact that you've been touring nonstop since the end of COVID? What was it that brought you guys together in a much more succinct way for this record?
I think a lot of it was that these songs weren't completed. And when we sat down, we spent 3 days in Colorado before we went into the studio with Glenn. Glenn was on a Zoom the whole time, and we started from scratch. We had a list of like 20, 30 songs, and of not songs, but ideas of songs. And I think what set these songs apart was we really started writing them together. I mean, some people came with choruses and melodies and whatnot, but a lot of them were really written from the ground up as a group, which was, I think, so it really encapsulates our sound and what it would mean to write, to combine all of our four ideas of songwriting into one sort of, I don't know, mesh of a sound that is Kitchen Dwellers. This is definitely the most Kitchen Dwellers record.
Yeah, for sure. I was going to mention that your sound has, if you're going to perfect a sound, probably by the fourth record, you should know what that sound sounds like. And certainly this record is Kitchen Dwellers. It's interesting because without abandoning the idea of a bluegrass band and four instruments on stage and no drumming, there does seem to be a very percussive element to the music you're making. And certainly more electronics in the music that you're making. That could be the studio, that could be just effects, but it really does have a much more vibrant sound than just saying, yeah, we're a bluegrass band. Is that important for you guys at this point to sort of grow, not grow up is such an unfair word because it adds a lot of subjectivity to it, but is this the sound? Is this where you guys want to take your sound? You still want to sort of be consistent with that bluegrass feel and not necessarily having a drummer, but certainly the sounds are a lot more than traditional bluegrass music at this point.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head with that percussive sound, and that's sort of something that we've that's been a part of what we do since the beginning. We're all playing different parts of a drum kit at the same time, basically.
Right.
And the way the three people who aren't taking a lead have to lock together, I mean, that's just something that takes time to be able to really listen. And after spending a decade or more of doing it together, it's just sort of intuitive for us at this point. And I think that's a big part of our sound. Sean's mandolin is, we run it through the subs. It's
Right.
huge. It's fat. We have a very bass heavy bluegrass band. I play a lot of rhythm. I'm almost like playing the toms of a drum kit on my bass a lot of the time. And just having those mesh with the other instruments is what makes, I think, what makes us sound the way we do. At least from a rhythm player standpoint,
Right.
I'm not a soloist per se, and that's what's the most fun for me, is like when we can really get into those like grooves, and if we're jamming, get into stuff that we've never done before, and it all comes from the bass rhythm. It's almost like we're listening to whoever might be leading the jam with a solo or whatnot, but it's like the rhythm is really where we're taking things to new places, and that's where we're getting really exploratory. And I just have so much fun with it. But I think that is exactly what Kitchen Dwellers is all about. That's what maybe sets us, I don't know if it sets us apart, but that's what makes us sound like us, is the way we can all play rhythm together.
Yeah, you certainly don't sound like, other friends in the scene. Like you don't sound like Green Sky, you don't sound like Dusters. You sound and they don't sound like each other either, really. But you certainly don't sound like those guys anymore. or any less. You are a quartet, but there's this woman that keeps showing up, whether it's in live records or in the studio. How is Lindsay at this point the fifth Beatle? Is she basically the extra dweller at this point, because she appears on the record? She's been on tour with you on and off for a while now, either opening up sets or being a guest on your own sets. Like, if there was going to be a fifth Beatle, would Lindsay be that person, you think?
I mean, gosh, that'd be amazing. We all love Lindsay so much. Yeah, she's, I don't know, big sister to us at this point. I don't know what you call it, but it's so much fun having her around. And anytime we're in some sort of proximity to each other, we're always trying to do a sit-in or whatnot, and it's so much fun. And we feel so blessed to have gotten her on to be able to record on this album. That was so cool. Glenn's worked with her before, and so he actually went down to Nashville to do those parts with her down there. But yeah, we just love Lindsay and love working with her whenever we can.
There's so many epic songs, and I don't know if they were epic when you sat down to write them or to record them, but The Crow and the Raven is just, it's emotionally charged. The vocals are beautiful. The strings, like all of it, it's, and I think a lot of the songs on this record are reminiscent of that, but just the sonic volume of songs like that. I mean, is that something that you're blown away with when it finally all comes together and you hear it for the first time, like put down by Glenn and everybody else who's had a kind of a role in mastering it? Is it as exciting as I assume it would be? From my standpoint, it's very exciting. It must be even more exciting and fulfilling from your standpoint.
Yeah, the string edition was really cool. That was Glenn's idea. And we were a little hesitant at first thinking about that, but he convinced us, and when we first heard it, it was pretty spectacular. And he really brought that song to life, I would say. I mean, it's an incredible song. The song speaks for itself emotionally, but he made that into like a majestic piece, I would say.
Yeah there's so many, I mean, Here We Go is, you know, about the shootings in America. I mean, there's so many interesting twists and turns of this record. And obviously that has a lot to do with Dante's Inferno and the Seven Deadly Sins and all of that. But it's incredible that, you know, there are still continue to be themes throughout the music, whether it's, like I mentioned earlier, places you've journeyed to or experience on the road, whether it's been man versus man and human nature. I mean, there's a lot of these themes that you've experienced over time and have expressed over time in the four records. Do you think you'll get to a point where the load might lighten a bit in terms of the subject material and in terms of some of the things that you're thinking about?
I think everybody gets to that point at some point, but my like little notes that I keep in my phone and stuff is like the next few things that I was going to work on are like way too heavy, and they're like too heavy to work on, so I don't know, right? if that's the case. Like we've been recording these songs, but I think a lot of us come from pretty diverse backgrounds and interesting upbringings, and honestly I feel like we're kind of just scratching the surface as far as subject material. Like there's so many things that I would love to write about and see if they could come to fruition that maybe just haven't got there yet. I mean, I've only have four songs recorded or five songs recorded, I think. And, but yeah, I think you're right. A lot of people go through that phase where it seems like their younger years, they have all the trials and tribulations, and that's where all the heavy stuff comes from. And then the writing sort of changes. It gets either weirder or less heavy, less relatable as a musician ages. Not everybody's like that, of course, but, I don't know. I feel like we still have so much to give from our troubles of our life, I guess.
Yeah, you're kind of like the death metal of bluegrass bands or jamgrass bands. Like that's, I mean, the sound and the lyrical content. I mean, that's just, you know, it's interesting. You're on the road. I mean, this is a band that needs to be on the road. I don't need to tell you that. Your fans know that as well. You know, from March until well into May and June, you guys are on the road. Is that really where you have to be? You know, is that where this band sort of needs to be, is out on the road playing together, the four of you, or when an occasional guest drops in? Is it the road where you do your best and most important work, you think?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's where we grow as a band, but then also time off. I think we grow in the time off as well. And when we have a fresh start, like if we get a few weeks off and then we come back, I really notice there's this like jump to a different place. We're trying new things. We're trying different stuff. Yeah. And maybe that progression is slowly happening when we're on the road too, but it's noticeable when we take some time off between us. I don't know if it's like a noticeable thing to the listeners, but it's always fun to take a little bit of time just to, so everything's fresh again and new ideas come into play. But we are absolutely growing on the road, growing as a band, growing as musicians together on stage sonically. It's a moving piece that's just constantly kind of shifting. And yeah, the road is our home at this point.
Who chooses, you know, I gotta say, as far as covers go, you guys have the most interesting covers, I think, of the bluegrass. You know, everybody does some Grateful Dead tunes or some Allman tunes or whatever, but you guys really stretch out the covers in terms of what you're doing on the road. And I'm just trying to pull up some of those set lists, but who chooses these covers that you guys do? Is it something that you work out on the road in the van? Is it something that, you know, somebody has an idea and you just do it because you all know it? Or how do those covers come into existence night after night?
A lot of them come into existence from where we're playing. We'll get an idea that's based on like a band that's from the town we're going to, a holiday of the year, a date that's mentioned in a song, just something like that. We're like, ooh, we should learn that for tonight. And then we do. And then it's part of our repertoire. And the ones that stick, we're like, yeah, we're going to keep that one going. That was really fun. Some of them are one and done, but it's not really, I wouldn't say it's from one specific person or one specific motive. It's just kind of like when we're on the road and it makes things interesting to just kind of learn new songs as we go, especially based off of location. If people in that town can connect to it, whatnot, that's fun.
Like just the last show that's here on nugs.net. All right. The 59 mm-hmm. sound, which is Gaslight Anthem. Mm-hmm. Great song. Then it's 867-5309 Jenny, which is not a song that you would expect from the Kitchen Dwellers. And then Sundown. I mean, these are, you know, that's three songs that have completely different vibes, that have mm-hmm. completely different ages to them. You know, 59 Sound is like early 2000s. Jenny is probably the mid 80s. Sundown is late 70s. Like, so first of all, you're all huge music fans or nerds, and second of all, just to be able to pull these songs off and make them sound like Dwellers and not like the originals mm-hmm. is a really amazing thing. It's just luck of the draw. Is that what you're telling me? The four of
kind
you
of come? Yeah, I mean, those specific ones, we've been a fan of the band has been a fan of Gaslight Anthem, so that's what, and that was one of our favorites. We learned right. that one. 867-5309 was part of our New Year's countdown. We played songs 10, 9, 8, 7, yeah. blah blah blah. That was number 8.
Yeah.
Sundown, I think that show was actually our Sundown, but we do play Gordon Lightfoot's. Sorry. No, but because we do Gordon Lightfoot's Sundown as a joke. Because we'll go Gordon Lightfoot's Sundown into our Sundown,
right.
back into Gordon Lightfoot's Sundown.
Yeah.
It's kind of a funny thing. So we actually opened Red Rocks a couple of years ago with Gordon Lightfoot's Sundown as a joke.
Cool.
Because we had just come out with our Sundown.
I'm in Toronto, so I'm not too far away from where Gordon lived. And so it's whenever we see Gordon's music on a set list, we get excited. And then the show before that, you know, we'll just do Guerrilla Radio because we sound like Rage Against the Machine. Why not?
Yeah. A couple of the guys definitely come from like that punky, whatever, metal, that whole background. So do a lot of those.
It seems like you guys are back on the straight and narrow as far as being a band and getting out there and touring. I mean, it's like COVID is really in the rear view at this point. Would that be an accurate assessment of where you guys are at?
Yes, I would definitely. I don't see any lighter load at this point compared to 2019, early 2020. Yeah. We're kind of right back where we started. I mean, even to 2022, we were pretty much there
Yeah.
already.
It's a long way from playing dinners, right? In Denver at the dinner in a show type thing. This is great. Are you always writing new music? Are we going to wait another 2 years for another record, or is it something that you guys are always constantly working on because you're so excited when this music comes out? I would assume you want to make more of it, right?
2 years is usually the goal. This one was a kind of a big process, so I wouldn't be surprised if maybe it's 3, 4 years for the next one. We definitely have more songs. Everyone's always writing. But yeah, this is a kind of a big one for us. So I wouldn't be surprised if we took a little bit more time or maybe did some other, like maybe we do another reheated or something before the next one. We'll see what happens, but yeah.
Dude, thanks so much for taking the time. Really appreciate it. We caught you on short notice, and the publicist was very quick to set it up.
I'm
So
happy to do it.
thanks for doing it. I'm really excited. I'm excited that you guys are going to be out on the road with our pal Chris Jacobs. His new record is
Yeah, I can't
outstanding.
wait.
I'm sure there'll be a lot of collabs on stage with Chris and with Leftover Salmon and all of the
Definitely.
other bands that you'll be playing with on this tour. Congratulations on a great record, dude.
Thank you.
And keep at it, man. It keeps getting better and better with every release. So keep at it.
Appreciate it. Thanks, Eric.
Really cool update from Joe Funk on all things Kitchen Dwellers. To check the band's touring schedule or to support the band by buying some merch, visit kitchendwellers.com. Before we leave you, let's listen to another track off of Seven Devils. Here is Pendulum.
I just want to know if this is worth my time. These seconds mean too much for me to leave them behind. It ain't easy being sober in this life we've chose. Vices swing like diamonds on a pendulum. I know it takes a lot to break me out of my shell. I only speak from the heart and I don't speak too well. Trust me when I tell you, you can't right my wrongs. Take or leave it, baby, cause I'll be long gone. To my grave is running in the ground. Swinging right around on this shiny metal paw. I packed it in and wondered about the slippery slope I fall into here with inhibitions. I'll just stick to what I know. These two lines keep me straighter than a broken arrow's bow.
Too close to losing you.
swing like diamonds on a pendulum.
You've been listening to The Sound Podcast. Technical production by Adam Karsh and Andrea Ruse. Inspired by the music we love. For more, visit thesoundpodcast.com.